and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State. Very happy to be here, courtesy of Lucky Buck Deer Mineral down in Hillsdale, Michigan. Now, they were in Osseo, now they're in Hillsdale, much bigger place, and expanding they are. God bless Lucky Buck, man, a great Michigan company. And again, with all of the regulations out there with baiting and with supplemental feeding and the like, make sure that you are following the rules. Lucky-Buck.com is where you can go to find out all the details. They update them as often as possible. And as many of you may or may not know, there's some things going to the in front of the NRC today that will definitely affect Michigan and deer hunting. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the show. But again, thanks to our friends at Lucky Buck for being a part of Wild Michigan for this fifth year now, as we are entering our 13th year. And our good friend Ed Shaw at the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Education Center up at Mitchell State Park in Cadillac, Michigan, joins us right now. Ed, welcome, and happy late spring to you. We're making our way towards summer.
Oh, the weather has been beautiful, and it's a joy to be on the show as always.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. Now, you, with maybe like three hairs left in your head, just got done with the busy season, which was school kids up there, and that is fantastic that you guys have been putting about, what was it, 100 kids a day through there?
Close to it, yeah. It's pretty standard. Every kid goes through a black bear program where we teach them how hunting is a part of wildlife management, and all of them shoot archery, all of them go fishing, and we take them on a hike.
And that's a beautiful facility up there because, you know, my wife, myself, and my friend Russ Bartel were all up there for a bear clinic, and I think Russ has been up there since. You know, it's a great facility, especially in this late springtime, to get those kids out there.
Yeah, it really introduces them to those things that they don't have anymore. Like when we were kids, we ran around the yard with a bow and arrow and shoot things. And I mean, it was different. And a lot of those kids, it gives them that experience. They get to try archery. They get to go fishing. You know, the enjoyment that my staff gets out of watching them kids catch a nice big bass out of the canal or panfish is just over the top, you know?
It is. And, you know, with Michigan, northern Michigan, especially, well, central Michigan, in the springtime, so much is coming to life. So many new things out there. So many new animals coming in. You know, this is the springtime for birth, and there are so many new things to see that a lot of kids cooped up in schools, especially city schools, do not get to see.
Not to mention it introduces them to hunting. That's the most important part.
Right, because that's, you know, a big part of our economy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, the heck. You know, these kids, they end up playing a game of tag where they have a hunter, and they got to actually, I use old DNR license stickers, and it's fun. And they actually tag each other out as the hunter, and, you know, we play a game with that, and it shows how hunting is a major tool in controlling wildlife populations. So they're learning why hunting is important. Maybe they don't become a hunter, but at least they understand why hunting is important. And that, to me, is the most important thing that we're doing there at the Hunt and Fish Center.
You know, and I agree with that. I think the opportunity for them to learn on their own and then make the choice. You know, this is something I've always taught my own daughter that, you know, you may want to hunt, you may not want to hunt. That choice is up to you. I'm not trying to indoctrinate anybody with what we do here. You know, and that's a good option that you're giving those kids is, you know, you're not telling them you need to hunt. You're saying this is what happens, this is how we do it, and this is a step towards what we do and enjoy. And it's up to you whether you want to go that route or not.
Yeah, and it was a banger year this year. We had more school groups come to our facility than we ever have any other year. So it's a sign that the economy is doing well. And everybody's out and about, and we had a beautiful spring. You know, we had one day that it rained with a school group. It was phenomenal. It was just wonderful.
Now, we're speaking with Ed Shaw here. He is the interpreter at the Carl T. Johnson Hunnigan Fishing Center at Mitchell State Park in Cadillac. Now, for us older kids, Ed, what do you have coming up? Because you guys always have some great classes for the Outdoor Skills Academy.
The biggest thing is people seem to forget that hunter safety happens during the summertime. Everybody waits until September and October, just before hunting season, and we will run hunter safety in July and two in August, on top of many Outdoor Skills Academies, such as our bear clinic. July 29th is the very first bear clinic, so those who are interested in learning how to bear hunt, you don't have to draw your tag if you're interested. It's the only program like it in the country. And last year, we even saw people coming up from Tennessee and Indiana and Wisconsin coming over for our bear clinic. So it's pretty cool to be part of that. And as well as you guys know, as you guys attended it, it really gives you the confidence to get out there and do it on your own.
Yeah, it's true, too. Having previously bear hunted before even taking that class up at the Carl T. Johnson, I knew a fair amount about bear hunting, but you guys offered some different tricks, some different things that may be useful when hunting again, you know, which I do plan on going again at some point in time. In Michigan, of course, it's based on points and luck of the draw. And, that time is coming. For me, it's come because I think I've got about as many points as I'm going to need to get a license when I'd like one. But even if you don't bear hunt, this is some great skills to learn in the event you maybe change your mind one day, say, you know what, I want to bear hunt. You know, I want to go to Canada and bear hunt, which is relatively easy to get a license there. But here in Michigan, a little bit more difficult, but it's definitely things that you can use, and you won't forget them either. That's the one thing about this, Ed. I can tell you how you mix the scent with the liquid smoke and things like that, how you guys worked, you know, some of the bait sites and things of that nature. And it's stuff that really kind of sticks with you because it is hands-on and it is very interesting.
And that's our goal, and we really try to get people to the point where they can walk out and they understand the law. And that's one of our most commented parts about the class and people enjoy the most is everybody, all the hunters I've ran into for the most part, you know, always are trying to do the right thing. They're not out there intentionally trying to violate. So we have a conservation officer come into almost all of our DNR Outdoor Skills Academies. I really got to thank those guys for taking their time to come help the public understand. And I have two wonderful COs in Wexford County, and they really helped me out with those programs. And that's something that's really helped make those clinics is the fact that our officers are coming in and giving everybody all of that information and making sure that they understand it before they leave. And then on top of that, like you said, we're teaching them how to bait, how to place their stand, where to pick a spot. You know, it's really good information, and especially if you're not experienced. And then if you're in Michigan and you're only getting a tag every so many years, it's hard to be that experienced bear hunter.
Yeah, it is. I mean, Michigan's a very different place to hunt. In Canada, I mean, the bear population is so much different, and it's almost because of how these guys manage their sites. It's almost controlled. I mean, a lot different than it is here. Where I've never run dogs. They run dogs here in Michigan, and the bear hunting in Michigan is a little bit different. Now, mind you, the size of bears is probably a little bit different here as well because there are so many, and they get taken at a younger age in Ontario where we've hunt. Michigan's produced some very big bears, and if you ever want to get in on that, I suggest you start putting in for preference points and start mapping things out because it might take you a little while unless you want to hunt the western portion of the UP, which is a lot easier, but I still recommend a guide, and I still recommend that you maybe even take this class. So stick around. We're going to talk more with Ed Shaw. He is the interpreter at the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Center at Mitchell State Park in Cadillac, michigan.gov/DNR, and we should have a link to Ed and his group on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral.
you can send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up, turn the noise down, let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, all over the Great Lakes State, and our website, which I failed to mention very much of in the first part of the show. My apologies. WildMichiganRadio.com is where you can find us. You can follow us on Facebook. Absolutely do that. Facebook.com/WildMichigan. We'll keep you up to date with what's going on. NRC met earlier this week. We'll have updates on that about deer hunting in Michigan. And let's just say there's a lot of things going on. I'm not going to drag Ed Shaw into this. This is just me real quickly. CWD is not looking good in Michigan. It's really affecting how we're going to hunt here in Michigan and maybe some of the seasons. But that's all depending on what the NRC has put down. And we will, again, have that up on our website here for you to see, wildmichiganradio.com, and on our Facebook page, which we do more updates there than anything else. Now, back to Ed Shaw, who is on the Lucky Buck Hotline. He is the interpreter at the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Education Center. And, Ed, we were talking about getting some of the kids in there. And now some of the classes, you know, I'll briefly touch on. You've had steelhead classes, you had bear workshops. And now you guys, as you mentioned off air, are doing photography stuff, which is amazing because right now cinematography and the outdoors are so hand in hand right now because everybody is filming their hunts.
Yeah, so stuff that I learned was that your digital SLR camera, a lot of guys are just filming their hunts with that, and professionals are doing it with their digital SLR cameras. So I ended up taking a photography class, and I learned a ton of stuff, and inviting the guy to the Hunt and Fish Center to do some photography workshops, and he started a series now, and we just wrapped up our spring wildflower photography workshop, and I'll tell you what, I was amazed. I could not believe the quality of photos that I took out of all people. Let me tell you, I'm not that artistic type that came out of that class. And then this spring, we have several others around the state. And this fall, we're going to do a color tour photography workshop. So learning how to use your camera before you hit the woods. And maybe, yeah, it's not deer hunting, but it's good practice to know how to use that camera to get those beautiful shots that everybody sees on the internet and social media these days, or videos. It's really cool to learn how to do that stuff.
It is, and it's so important. You know, I bought a digital camera. I bought a Canon 7D. A couple of years ago, I am just a little slow on the upkeep right here. A couple of years ago, when we went to Ireland, and I bought it used from a friend of mine who's a photographer, videographer for a, he's independent now, but was with one of the major universities here in the state. And he's like, you know what? This is all you need for everything you do. And he gave me the DVD and everything as to how to use it properly. And the functionality of just a digital camera goes so far nowadays. I mean, with top quality video work, you can attach a small, boom mic to it and everything else, and away you go. And it's not as intrusive as the great big cameras we used to have.
And it fits right in the pop-up blind with the kids. So, and that's why I got into it. I wanted to learn how to do that photography for my kids when I'm out there hunting with them. And it's pretty cool, but I was clueless. I didn't know how to use all the different functions and what to do and what lenses to use here and there. And they really, Tom Haxby was the one who did our clinic for us. They really did a nice job. And I'm really hoping to have Charles St. Charles, another well-known photographer, in there to do some classes. And it's been really nice putting together that series, and it hits those people that may not be interested in hunting, but it gets them through my door and at the Hunt and Fish Center.
Absolutely. Now, I know we're a little ahead of ourselves, but you guys do one heck of an ice fishing clinic up there. And you also have equipment to rent, which is awesome.
We do that also for steelhead fishing. You can come check out a steelhead rod if you guys would like one. And you can use it for the day and bring it back. But we do the same thing with ice fishing. We have all the equipment, shanties, heaters this winter. It's not too early to sign up for those, or at least get on our waiting list for those types of things. And we have everybody from HT Enterprises, Clam Outdoors, Fishbones Custom Lures, Vexilar, Mr. Heaters. And all sponsors our clinics and our classes, and they get on there, and we have all their pros come in, and they put on a phenomenal clinic.
Now, for those of you who don't know, Michigan is home to some of the absolute top ice anglers in the world, and I do mean that literally, because you know a good friend was a world champion ice angler over in Poland. He's got the trophy at home to prove it, and our good friend Norm Smith and our good friend Chad Schaub has been part of Team USA ice fishing that's traveled the world. So I mean, right here in our back door, even in, like I said, in Lansing, Michigan, with Mike, you've got world-class ice anglers teaching these classes.
Oh, yeah, and I got to go fishing this spring with Chad, and let me tell you, the difference in guide services to guide services, holy cow, is he a good fisherman. And patient, let me tell you, he is a good teacher. And these are the kinds of people that we bring in to teach those. That's what the outdoors clinics is about, bringing those people in to teach those types of clinics and learning from those experts. Because everybody seems to have a perception sometimes that these pros are, you know, out there and not available, but really they do. They want to give back that knowledge. That's what they're in the industry for. And these guys are great. They do a phenomenal job. It's probably one of our best clinics, the Hardwater School. And we have a good time with it because we can actually get you out on the ice and spend the whole day out there with you, teaching you all the different techniques of whatever you want to learn. And that's how we do it. You pick what you want to do, and then we put you with that pro, and you fish one-on-one with them guys. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'll say this about Chad too. Chad Schaub is an amazing teacher. Norman and I went out a few years back with Chad, and the fishing was incredible. I mean, Norman and I both pulled up 12.5-pound steelhead, which were just absolute monsters on the Muskegon. And when you know a good guide, when you have somebody that is enjoying what you're doing as much as you are, and maybe even more because they're teaching you, and Chad is definitely one of those guys.
And he got me my personal best steelhead, so it was definitely a wall hanger.
Yeah, us too.
Awesome.
Us too. It was incredible. I didn't know they get that big, but believe me, they get that big. It's a great time. But Michigan.gov/DNR is where you can look for the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Education Center. Do not miss the opportunity this summer to get up there, or any of the places with the Outdoor Skills Academies. You can look them up on the DNR website. But don't miss the opportunity to take hunter safety a little early this year, maybe this summer, maybe with Ed's group up there, because it's something that, you know, everybody tries to cram it in the fall, and then you about miss it. But Ed, thank you so much as always, man. We appreciate you.
Yeah, looking forward. I hope to see you guys at the center and out in the woods this fall.
Absolutely. Ed Shaw, appreciate you joining us. We're going to speak with the deer professor, Doug Roberts, talk a little bit about antler growth and maybe some of the stuff that's coming our way, possibly for Michigan, because of CWD here on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time. Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Thanks to Ed Shaw over at the Carl T. Johnson Hunting and Fishing Education Center at Mitchell State Park. Lots of great programs going on through that facility and all the other state parks here in Michigan. Make sure you look them up, michigan.gov/DNR. And Ed is a great guy, man. Absolute great guy. Very good friend. And I will stand by this comment as, and our next guest will chuckle at this. Conversations I have with our guests off air, I think, are far better for radio than they are on. but there's about a lot of things we can't talk about, so I don't even know why I brought it up. It's just funny. Our good friend Doug Roberts, the deer professor with Conquest Sense, joins us right now. And Doug, man, I tell you what, I mean, between the conversations I have with you, with Carl, with any guest, I think, to me, are far, far more educational and far more informative. But again, it's because of things that haven't been talked about, you know, officially yet, I guess. And but we are going to talk things that are official right now. It's the spring season. Fawns are being born and have been born throughout the state. And it seems weather-wise, we're about a month behind. And the first question I want to ask is, what is that going to do to antler growth? Because it's been a weird year thus far.
It has, and good morning. You know, that month behind, if you think back to fall, the rut hit about a week and a half, 2 weeks late, pretty much, and so it set the fawns back. How did the deer know we were going to have such a rough winter in late spring? So everything has been, you're literally correct, everything has been set back about a week and a half to 2 weeks, fawn drop and antler growth. But I can tell this, if we get normal summer, for some reason, the antlers just seem to grow faster. They still will pretty much get back to where they need to be. So hunters don't have to worry about having all kinds of small antlers because of the weather. They're going to catch up, and I'm seeing it happening right now on the farm, that they're doing the catch up. So
now,
exciting.
At any given time, you're around 200 deer on your facility here in Michigan, you know, and you're watching antler growth. And now, mind you, there is some supplements going into the feeding and whatnot, but how does your captive herd differ aside, I mean, on average, from the wild herd? I know the nutrition's very different, but, I mean, still the lifestyle is pretty much the same.
Yeah, the lifestyle is the same. In fact, you know, it's funny, we had a number of QDMA president, you know, chapter presidents here yesterday, and as we gave them a farm tour, the comment they made was, holy cow, it amazes me, these deer actually act like wild deer. In fact, they're more wild than some of the deer around my house, but it's like they're trained, they know where the fence is at and where to stop, and that's true. But, you know, as far as antler growth, we're pretty much on the same level. It's just the timing of when the antler drops to when it starts growing. We have one here that's unique that it dropped one side about a week and a half early from the other side, and now that side is consistently a week and a half ahead growing of that second side, and that's how it'll end up. It will never that side will never catch up. So it's going to be kind of an odd-looking deer. And that happens in the wild also. You really want the antlers to drop consistently at the same time.
Now, how does that work, Doug? And I'm glad you brought that point up, because we see drops, you know, we see sheds and whatnot. But how is it that the deer's body says, okay, both you guys, gone, out of here?
But it creates an infection. There's an infection that separates the glue that holds the antler base to the pedicle that is actually in the head. The pedicle actually sets in the skull itself. And that pedicle, when it sheds, you look at the bottom. That's the first thing I always do, look at the bottom of that antler. And if it's nice and smooth and round and clean, that tells me a couple things. One, the deer is healthy. He's made it through the winter. He's healthy. It's a clean drop. It also means that they're going to heal up, scab over, and start growing with a complete and perfect antler coming out. If it's very jagged and uneven, they have to fill all of those crevices in first with antler before anything shows out up top. And it also means that the deer is in some form of unhealthiness, whether that's the immune system, the minerals, maybe he's lost way too much weight and he's not able to get his body coming back because he doesn't have the food source. That will all have a bearing on how that antler drops and the new one starts growing.
Yeah, it's always kind of you know, fascinated me that you'll see one, you know, around that time of year, the one is dropped, there's still one remains, you know, you wonder how long it's been there, is the other one going to fall off? Or I've actually seen on film where one's popped off and then the other one's popped off right after it.
Oh, yeah, we found one this year that the antlers were actually laying on top of each other.
And that's really what you want to see. But it's that glue. It's the infection that separates the glue. And the healthier the animal is, the more consistent those antlers will drop at the same time. And again, when we say the same time, if it's a day apart, that's still really pretty much the same time. But plus, hunters have to understand they're not always on the ground. We have found them hanging in trees because the deer may be running, and all of a sudden that antler bounces off it. It's like a springboard and ends up hooked up in a tree or on top of a brush pile. We have found them in some really interesting places. Because when that separates, it's a springboard and pops off. If they're standing still, it just falls off. So we've even seen them kick them off.
That's funny. I they're like morels to me. You know, I just never find the damn things, and I know they're out there.
Duran, we know they're in a confined area.
Sure.
You can't find them sometimes. I mean, it's just they blend in so well. And it's not like we're looking for smaller sets of antlers.
Right,
these
right.
are breed bucks. And it takes a day or two sometimes to find them in a three-acre area. So, right. And we know they're there. It's crazy. Right.
Speaking with Doug Roberts, the deer professor with Conquest Sense, here on the Lucky Buck Hotline on Wild Michigan. Now, how is the fawn count been this year for you guys? Does the winter really affect it? And you know, with the late breeding season, how did the timing work out?
The timing, our fawns actually, we normally start around the 15th of May on this farm. This year, we were actually about a week and a half late. We're right now, this past week, first part of June, has been our biggest fawn drop. So, we're about 2 weeks behind. It's been very good. Now, what's nice with our farm is the deer have a perfect world. They get all the nutrition they want all winter long. So, they didn't feel the hurt of the harsh winter and the late spring coming in where the wild deer herd. We lost a number of fawns and actually some does to starvation because they couldn't get to the food. They abort them to keep themselves alive. So it definitely harmed the wild deer herd here in Michigan with the winter we had.
You know, and we've got issues with CWD, and I mentioned earlier in the show that we're not going to really talk about it that much here on the show, because until we get a definitive answer from what the NRC has brought down, because we record on the same day that they meet, and I know this is a big deal going on, and we want to have, the minute we have the final recommendations, if any, for the changes in the deer season for 2018, we'll post them on our Facebook page at facebook.com/wildmichigan, and you get a link from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Because of the implications and so much going on to your industry and to hunters in general, we want to hold off until we have that definitive answer as to what they're going to do. So by the time you're hearing this, you can go to the Facebook page and see what's happened.
The recommendations, you know, of course, our industry's been involved with the DNR and all of the other groups in kind of looking at the recommendations. And so that's what we're going to see coming in.
All right. Doug Roberts is our guest. We're going to come back with more. Appreciate you joining us. All the information, wildmichiganradio.com, and on our Facebook page as well.
And you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale around here.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral, all over the Great Lakes State and all over the world on our podcast. And you can find those at wildmichiganradio.com. Speaking with Doug Roberts, the deer professor. And real quickly, Doug, I want to touch on the Conquest 200 television show you guys did. It was a great show. It had a great run. But it's still out there, even though the episodes are new. Is that correct?
New episodes. We're going to take the four seasons. We've actually are going to start re-airing them on the Pursuit Channel starting here in third quarter, which is actually the last week of June. We were tired out. You know, it's having a camera in your face 24/7 for four straight years. Everything you do from the time you wake up to go to sleep, which it was exciting to do. It was fun to do, and I think it brought an awareness to not only our scents, but also deer farming and farming in general, the ups and the downs. But it will air on Pursuit, and we're going back and starting with season one. So, man, I looked younger back there 4 years ago.
I think we all did.
Man. Oh, my goodness.
I was looking at me 4 years ago and going, what happened? Oh, yeah, I found that weight I misplaced. You never really lose it.
The white hair and all that. It's like, man, I was darker back then. So,
But I think what you did is you brought a good representation of your industry, which, look, I'll be honest, there are people that don't like your industry. There are people that don't like the deer facilities that produce these big bucks for other facilities. And that is completely their prerogative. But we've seen over the course of 13 years a very different side as to how it can be presented and should be presented. And then we've seen a lot of cases, too, aside from this, on how it should not be. I mean, that whole case right. with CWD in Michigan started on a private facility, and you knew it was bad when the guy tried to smuggle deer out that very night.
You know? Well, and there's a lot of misunderstanding, and there's been a lot of cleaning up of our industry. We've had to do it on our own. We've gone from almost 900 licensed facilities. We're down to 328 current licensed facilities, and the ones we have are very, very good. If you look at it from a disease standpoint, since 2004, we've had two deer come up with CWD in farm deer, two total deer, and both facilities are being depopulated. You look at the wild deer herd, we started with 11 last fall, and we immediately jumped up to 57 infected animals in the wild deer herd. So we know where the infection is, but what we really need to do is, and all get together, is we've got to find out actually how is it being spread? How is it contaminating the environment? And so the groups have really got to come together. But our industry has done a lot of stepping up. We've actually asked for more regulations to be put on ourselves. And we're already the most regulated agricultural industry that there is. But again, we found some loopholes, and we're trying to close them up to make our industry more legitimate.
You know, you have to applaud a group of individuals and companies like yourself that take the time to say, you know what, there are things we can change to make our restrictions even tighter. When yep. most are looking for ways out of these things, you guys are looking for a way to make things tighter and more, you know, difficult for these things to happen. And that should speak volumes to a lot of people.
Well, you know, understand, we love the white-tailed deer just as much as any white-tail hunter here in Michigan. We like them behind the fence. We like the wild deer. We're all hunters in Michigan, you know, free-range animals. And if there is a problem there, we all have to be part of the solution. But our industry uniquely has so much science that we have studied. We talked off the air, one of the things, we're so close to a vaccination for EHD. If we can vaccinate our animals to where they cannot die from EHD, if we can transfer that into a feed supplement of somehow getting it to the wild deer herd, and we can eliminate the deaths of EHD, my goodness, how good could that be? But we can't do it without the deer industry, because we have the animals to test. We have the money to research all of those things. We're 80% on a live CWD test. You know, it's 80% accurate, so we can actually now start to live test some of our animals and get a very good consensus where CWD is or is not. And so we're looking at how do we transfer that to the wild deer herd so we can help manage a disease that is now here in Michigan.
You know, and I know a lot of that has to do with funding and manpower. In the state, it's very limited with your facilities, the you guys that do these things. You are more centrally focused. And look, I love our DNR. This is not a complaint against them. It's they are underfunded, undermanned, understaffed all the way around, much like our law enforcement. And you know, it's very hard to regulate things like that.
They're limited in every single way. Our industry has spent millions of dollars in research in all the ways. And the latest one that we hadn't even talked about, so I'm going to catch you off guard a little bit. If you remember scrapies in sheep, and this is where it all started, mad cow disease come from scrapies, CWD, and the cervid industry has come from scrapies sheep. They were able to find certain genomes, resistant genes in certain sheep that could resist scrapies. And as of today, scrapies no longer exists. It's gone because they bred those genetics and bred that disease right out. We have found certain genome types, genetic types in certain animals that are resistant to CWD, the prions. And so we now are going through our industry, and we're amazed at how many animals we're raising that are genetically resistant already to CWD. So if we breed a doe that's resistant and a buck that is resistant together, their offspring become completely resistant to CWD.
And now
we can take those animals and actually either repopulate the wild herd, but I think we're going to find Michigan itself in the wild is going to have some of those resistant genes, and we can multiply them.
That's huge. It is huge. And you know what? And this, again, leans towards the fact for those who just look at it like all that is a bunch of deer in a pen that they come out and feed. It's not the case, man. There's so much more to it than that. And again, everybody's entitled to their opinion. No matter what they know, they will always have it. And that's fine. That's fine. But you know what? This is why, again, we bring people like yourself on here that do so much. It's more than just... than raising trophy deer, plain and simple.
Yeah, that is a byproduct, honestly, of what we're doing. Right now, the CWD situation, and now that it's here in Michigan, I mean, it's very close to us and our industry. And we're looking at it naturally, but Michigan has turned in, the deer farming industry in Michigan has turned in more DNA samples to find those genetic resistant deer than any other state in the country. In fact, we have one of our members that has a deer farm has actually built the first lab, private lab, to start doing this DNA matching to find the resistance, and he spent his own money. Now, you're looking at $250,000 he has spent to build this lab so we can speed up the process of finding these animals and start breeding them at a quicker rate. So I really think that has a lot of potential of being what scrapies was and did, and how did we get rid of it, and I think we can do it in the wild deer herd as well.
Well, you know what, I'm always positive to think that we can make a change. I'm never going to say never in this industry or in general. But you know, like I'm saying, like I've kind of been alluding to. In some of our social media posts and whatnot, I think again this deer season I might just sit back and see what happens. But but then again, maybe not. Maybe I'll travel this time and find out how it is in other places.
You know, Duran, you and I have talked about it. It's going to take everybody with a positive attitude, a positive effort of working together. And I don't care if you're a bow hunter, a gun hunter, if you're a deer farmer, if you're just a free-range whitetail hunter here in Michigan, we have all got to work together in order to come up with the best solutions of what's best to manage the whitetail herd, because Michigan has a great tradition of whitetail hunting. And if we argue, we get nowhere. If we work together, who knows? The end results could be unbelievable.
Absolutely. Make sure you check him out online, conquestsense.com. Look for him again in the third quarter.
Third quarter
on the Pursuit Channel, Conquest 200. Great people, Doug and Karen Roberts. Doug, thank you so much for joining us here on Wild Michigan, and best of luck, man. Keep me up to date as to what happens.
I will do. I'll let you know. And thank you again for having me on.
Absolutely. Anytime, man. Take care of yourself. Look forward to talking to you again. Whole another hour coming your way. And make sure to find us online, wildmichiganradio.com, and our Facebook page, facebook.com/wildmichigan. Thanks, as always, to Lucky Buck Deer Mineral of Hillsdale, Michigan. Lucky-buck.com. It's Wild Michigan.